We had some technical difficulties. Deal with it.
Welcome to Rise of the Rule Lords Unchained. Today we're talking about lore. Star Wars has two expanded universes, the good one and the Disney one. Lord of the Rings has the Silmarillion, and the Elder Scrolls has all of those books that you never ever read. But lore is an important part to any tabletop roleplay game, and Pathfinder is no exception. And today I am very pleased that we have an expert on Galarian lore. Victoria Sullivan is an artist, writer, and DM that produces Visit Galarian videos for Deadly D8, friend of the podcast. These videos cover all kind of Pathfinder 1E and 2E lore. They also run a Visit Galarian TikTok that features bite-sized samples of Pathfinder lore. Welcome, Victoria. What are your pronouns and what's your claim to fame?
Hi, my pronouns are she, they, and my claim to fame is largely what you just said. So my show started out as a pandemic idea to basically pass the time while I was stuck at home. And I had gotten the idea that it would be kind of a cool idea to create a channel on TikTok that did little bite-sized pieces of Galarian lore because I love it. Personally, I think it's some of the best lore out there in terms of RPGs. And so I started doing these little minute-long videos on TikTok completely for fun. And eventually I made a Twitter to reach out and offer it on another platform because I know a lot of people don't have TikTok. And so eventually I got the attention of Eli from Deadly D8, and he suggested that we make slightly longer videos with some art and some music and really make it more involved and more of a production. And so that's where I got started making Gloria's videos.
Tell me a little bit more about the show. Like, where'd you get the idea for Gloria? She kind of reminds me of Miss Frizzle, the character for it. So like, what goes into the show and what got you thinking about using Gloria as a character?
So I originally framed the TikTok as a sort of like informational travel guide, just because I felt like it needed to have some kind of very loose theming. And so I just sort of took that and ran with it when I started coming up with ideas for the video. So I knew I needed to have some kind of little avatar, and Gloria is a resident of New Thassilon, which I'm probably going to talk about a little bit at some point in this podcast. And she works for Sorshin, who is the ruler of New Thassilon, or at least of Eurythnia. And that's her whole job, is essentially letting people know how cool Galarian is, what a great place it is to be, and invite people from other realms, so players or PC characters, to visit. And it's still kind of in the early stages. I really hope to kind of expand on it a little bit and really start giving some tips to DMs and players, as well as kind of tell them about the facts. I've been told that that's something that would be useful. So she's still in the early stages of development.
So tell me, what's your favorite piece of Galarian lore right now?
Oh, yeah. So I had to think about this a lot because that's a really hard question. I came up with about 7 or 8 different ideas of what I wanted to talk about, honestly. But I settled on talking about elves. Elves in Galarian are very unique. They're not actually native to Galarian.
Yeah.
They're from a planet known as Kestrevel, which is a neighboring planet in the solar system that Galarian is in. And they actually originally came to Galarian and other planets through something called an Ayudara, which is an elf gate. That's what non-elves call them. And they're just portals. They use these portals to go back and forth between their planet and other planets. They control them pretty strictly. So what's interesting about that, the fact that they're not from this planet, is it informs a lot from a lore standpoint. Normally, like in Lord of the Rings, elves are weird because they're so old and they're so different than like humans and dwarves and the younger races. But in Pathfinder, they're alien and weird because they're literally aliens.
Yeah. I mean, it's been kind of cool to learn a little bit more about each of the backgrounds, like the true backgrounds of Galarian ancestries. Like the gnomes are from a different world. The dwarves came from literally underground. So yeah, learning that elves were aliens, that blew my mind.
Once you get to where they do end up in Galarian, like so many of the other races, as they've developed as a people, they've branched off into so many different subcategories. There are elves that live in Tian Sha that are basically like cool samurai elves. There's the Alijay and the Ekujay in Mwangi Expanse. There's the Drow, and then the cavern elves that are the non-evil Drow. There are the aquatic elves, and that's just because they've been around for so long that they have just branched off into so many different... They're so different than just like, hello, I am an elf from Lothlorien.
Yeah.
We are not that different from the elves of Rivendell.
Yeah.
They're just so... And that's true across the board with Galarian. I mean, I could say the same thing about dwarves, and the more they come out with, the more they develop, the more unique and interesting all of the races get. So, but that's just one little interesting and very influential part of the lore that I think is cool to talk about.
So what's your favorite real world lore? And by that, I mean like mythologies of planet Earth or urban settings or what's it called? Urban tales. Anyway, yeah. So what do you really like going on around here?
So one of my favorite things to look for in like real world stuff, because I mean, I trawl around on Wikipedia and stuff, just like I do through Pathfinder books. I really like finding stuff that challenges kind of our preconceived notions about places or groups of people. One of my favorite things to read about is comparing when things happened in history that maybe you wouldn't expect, like the fact that woolly mammoths were still alive when the pyramids were being built, or the fact that Oxford predates the Aztec Empire. Those are things you don't normally think about, but they add a lot of context to kind of the global picture, which I really like. The other thing I like to look for is learning about like people who were not traditionally considered LGBTQ. And learning about those sorts of things, those sorts of people. I like watching how like the representation is growing the more we learn. And that's something I appreciate about Pathfinder, too, because they really make an effort to include that.
Like how Sir Isaac Newton just had a roommate.
Mm-hmm. As I've seen. Yeah, he's just oh, my God, they were roommates. but in addition to that, I really like cryptids. That's just a fun one that I like. I like learning about all the different monsters that are supposed to live in the real world. Mothman's my favorite.
Mothman, okay.
So those sorts of things.
I really like the Mogla Membe, supposedly a dinosaur still living in Africa, which they actually, I think, just put in the Mwangi Expanse book. So
yes,
that was cool to see.
Yes, they did. That's a really cool one. I like that one a lot, too. I also read something the other day about Nessie being the ghost of a dinosaur.
A ghost?
Ooh, yeah, like because not everybody can see Nessie, so she must be a ghost. I thought that was kind of funny.
That was my jam back in high school when we were still watching, you know, stuff on a real TV channels and
right.
stuff. Was midday, it would always be about Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, and ghosts. And I drank those up, so I'm definitely there with you. Cryptids are super fun to go into. So what kind of homebrew lore have you worked on?
That's a very good question. A good chunk of my homebrew lore has largely been built up over the course of games that I've run, which haven't been a ton, but I've run a lot of sessions. The big one that I have completely finished was that, and is actually the first game I ever finished, was Rise of the Runelords. And I'm working through Jade Regent now, and I've got five or six other games that I've got in the back pocket too. Yeah, to get back to the question, that lore that I've worked on has largely come about as a result of the choices that the players made in the game. I didn't actually set out to make brand new stuff that much until fairly recently. But it's really cool to watch kind of how their actions have shaped Galarian as a result. I pulled a couple of examples that I really like to talk about. And one of those is the Liviana family of Tal'Dor. Okay. And I'll explain who they are in a minute. And the Order of the Vault, which is a brand new Hell Knight order that came about as a result of the game. So the Livianas are a minor noble family from Tal'Dor that I basically built from the ground up by taking one of the PCs who he really wanted his character to have a big family that she really valued. And they came up a little bit in the game, but I ended up making like a 5-generation family tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
It is. It was a lot. I went to a fugue state making that family tree. It was like a big project. And I kind of built off of a lot of pretty common tropes to sort of build this family up. So the patriarchs of the family are 3 brothers. They each have different personalities. And they came from a family of like tailors. And they earned their noble titles by adventuring and saving their hometown from sea drakes. And yeah, so it just sort of evolved from there. I really like that. I liked that project because it was kind of, it didn't really have a lot to do with the game, but it was fun to do. And it really kind of made me flex my creative muscles to come up with 15 or 20 different unique people with backstories and all that.
So what'd your players do to kind of inspire that creation?
They just played the game. I don't think they did anything particularly. I mean, they did talk to me outside of the game from time to time about things they wanted to do and what they maybe wanted to see in the game. But for the most part, they just played the game. That's kind of where the Order of the Vault came from. The Order of the Vault came from one of the players who is a Hell Knight of the Order of the Nail. I don't feel like this is a big spoiler for Rise of the Runelords. There's a lot of magic
it's
items.
It's been out for a while.
You know, it's been out for a while. Yeah. Lots of magic items in the game. Lots of evil stuff. And she sort of came to the conclusion that as a Hell Knight, it was her job to protect people from these magic items that could be used to hurt people and cause chaos. Mm-hmm. However, there's not really a order of Hell Knights that focuses on that. So she was like, can I make one? You know, can I make a new order? Mm-hmm. And so she did. I mean, I dug in. I learned about how Hell Knight orders operate. They have a symbol. They have a reckoning, which is like their weird punishment they do when they, you know, when they falter in their mission in the future. One of my players that plays with me all the time is going to play a member of that order in Return of the Runelords.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, and it was just through playing the game. I mean, I don't think they did anything particularly time consuming or difficult. It was just as a result of knowing their character, they decided that they wanted to take this action. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of dug into the lore of Hell Knights to figure out how to make that happen. And it did.
So speaking of Galarian lore, there's a lot. It might seem a little bit overwhelming, but for people who are just getting into the world of Galarian, who want to have their games take place there, what do you think are some essential reading for them? Some books. I know that there's companion settings for 1E. What would you recommend people digest so that they can get a good overview of what's going on in Galarian?
So I think the first and most easily accessible things that you're going to want to read are Lost Omens books. Amazing. They not only do they add a lot of new rules and options for your characters, they're mostly lore. I mean, I would say 75% of the books are just like facts about stuff. My personal favorite of the Lost Omens books is Lost Omens Legends, because it highlights kind of the VIPs of Galarian, people who are like rulers or big movers in Galarian that cause their actions cause major ripples in the world.
Right.
And those are the sort of people that you can build entire campaigns around, because they're so prominent. You're going to gain not just information about them, but about information about where they live, who they work with, who their enemies are. And those are all people that you can then feed into your campaigns.
The Whispering Tyrant is one of my favorites. I mean, like, you know, he's the big bad, so maybe it's a little stereotypical to cite him right off the bat. But I just find that concept of like one super megalich to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's just basically like Galarian Sauron, right? Like, he's like the worst thing that could possibly happen to Galarian. Yeah. He's super cool. You can't deny that. I mean, it might be, maybe it is, you know, stereotypical to talk about him first, but that's why he's so bad. I mean,
yeah, he gets your attention right away.
Yep. And then the other book I would suggest from the Lost Omens series is the Mwangi Expanse book. It is in particular a work of art from a lore standpoint. And they just put so much love and attention to everything that was in that book. So yeah, highly recommend that one. Once you've worked your way through 2E stuff, I would recommend trying to get your hands on some of the big 1E books too. The campaign settings are really good. I would suggest the Intersea World Guide or the Guide to Absalom. Those are both really good ones to start with, because those will hit a lot of the big places that come up a lot. But there are, I mean, if you dig, you can find campaign settings for almost everywhere in Galarian. There were a few places that they didn't get to, but there is a lot of content in those campaign settings. One of my favorites is the campaign setting for Nadal.
I know, I've heard it. I can't remember what it is.
Nadal is a country that is run by people who worship Zonkuthon, who is a god of pain and sorrow.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk forever about that, but it is a really interesting place because it's been around for 10,000 years and has functioned pretty much the same way for 10,000 years. And so you get to see a lot of really interesting differences between a place like that and a place like Cheliax, which has had a lot of kind of upheaval and a lot of political conflict. Nadal does not have that much political conflict, at least on the surface. So
just a lot
it's
of
a very unique, there. Yeah, very unique and different place. That would be a really great place for a campaign. And I guess the big thing that I would recommend is to just read what you like. Don't worry about getting everything in order or knowing all of the facts about one particular thing, because it's going to take forever. I mean, it's taken me like 2 years of active study to know what I know. And there's still so much I've just not read. So, you know, if you like gods, pick up Gods and Magic. It's a great book. I like that one a lot, too. If you want politics and culture, grab the World Guide. Another excellent book. They're all great. So whatever you want to read is the stuff that I would really ultimately recommend you go for.
Yeah. As a reminder to listeners, Paizo has every single one of their books available as a PDF too. So if you're not able to find a physical copy, you can still read all of this material that's out there. Or you can pay a huge amount of money on eBay for some of these rarer ones, but it's all still out there for you. So then now I'm going to ask you a real softball, super easy question, which is, what should people who are new to 2E know about the game lore-wise?
Yeah, so without getting into too many 1E spoilers, which again, all of the stuff's been out for a long time, but There are definitely some key events that I think any player or DM would really benefit from understanding and knowing if you're going to play in the Galarian sandbox. The first one is Earthfall. Basically, it was a global reset when a bunch of evil Aboleths decided to destroy the world. And so they made a giant meteor fall to Earth fall to Galarian. And it destroyed pretty much everything. It took out the Thessalonian Empire, which was a very, very bad, evil empire run by wizards. It forced the elves out of their ancestral home on Galarian and caused them to scatter, which is where Drow came from. That's when those elves I was talking about in Tian Sha ended up going there. And it triggered the dwarves coming out from underground, as you said, and begin their quest for Sky, which is why we have dwarves on Galarian on the surface. And that's just a few things that it influenced. It completely changed the course of the planet up to that point. Yeah. And that happened about 10,000 years ago in like the timeline. The other major thing that I came up with that's very important is the death of Aridin. Aridin was the god of humanity and prophecy in Galarian, and he kind of disappeared for a while, and there were prophecies that he was going to come back. Cheliax believed that Aridin was going to come back and take over and make everything fantastic for Cheliax, and there were other prophecies like that too. But when he died, which was in 4606, it literally broke prophecy in Galarian, which means prophecy no longer works in Galarian. It's not a thing. Doesn't happen. And that's why the current era of history is called the Age of Lost Omens. It's where the name of the book comes from. So not only that, triggered major political upheaval in Cheliax that basically let the Thrunes take over, caused paladins and clerics of that god to lose all their powers. And at the same time, it caused a permanent hurricane to emerge on the coast of Gurund, called the Eye of Abednego. And that's just there now.
Yep.
It's just there now. And nobody knows why, and nobody can get rid of it. It's just there.
It's so essential that it's a permanent part of the campaign map whenever you look at it.
Yep. It's huge. I mean, it's enormous. And it's, you know, it destroyed that whole swath of land there. There were people that were displaced by the hurricane. Yeah, I mean, that is another event that really shaped Galarian. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's important to know that stuff because in addition to giving a lot of context for why Galarian works the way it does, from the standpoint of a GM, that's all what I just listed off there is like a lot of plot hooks. Like just like if you take just like the Eye of Abednego, for example, you can answer all those questions that brings up, like what's in there? How would you get in there? Can you get out? What happens when you get out? You know, is there a monster in there? Is, you know, Aridin in there? Nobody knows. And as a GM, you can answer that question yourself. And that's a campaign, you know. So those are the two big ones that I came up with that I think are really important.
Yeah. I mean, Paizo's never going to answer those questions for us.
No, exactly.
At least, you know, maybe like on the dark day when Paizo goes out of business, they'll like do a little announcement. By the way, Eye of Abednego has this. But yeah, like in the meantime, like it's your play box. You can do whatever you want with it. There's this concept of high and low magic settings sometimes where when people want to make their own completely new worlds, they might have a choice between those two. So they don't want to use Galarian. They want to make their own stuff. So what's the difference between a high and low magic setting? And what kind of lore do you think you'd expect to see from either of them?
So to be honest, I don't see an enormous difference between high magic and low magic settings in terms of that. I think there's just as much potential for political intrigue and culture wars and disasters. I think what that really shapes is what you want to be the cause of those things. So that being said, in terms of like examples, I would say a high magic setting is much more likely to have lore that makes major changes to the world, like its physical or metaphysical structure, because magic tends to be the only thing that can really touch that. Like Aridin dying, for example. Mm-hmm. That is something that had to have been caused by, I mean, it was a god. So something enormously magical and out of the realm of a low magic setting had to have happened to make that happen. However, low magic would probably center on political, social, or cultural changes that people could actually affect. And I would say Galarian's somewhere in the middle, which makes it really fun to play with because you can, it doesn't matter what you want to do. I mean, if you want there to be a giant meteor that's going to hit the planet and it's magical and all of that stuff, then great. Or you can go to Cheliax and have, you know, a political revolution.
Yeah.
That's an AP. It's a good one, too. One thing I would say is important to remember, regardless of what setting you choose, is that at the end of the day, people are still people, whether they're slinging spells or swinging a sword around a battlefield. The same things still motivate people and inspire them and break their hearts and discourage them. So I would caution people not to let that setting, whether it's high or low magic, determine too much about how your players have to act. Because people are still people.
And so what kind of overall world building tips do you have for people who want to come up with their own completely new, unique setting?
Yeah, I've got several tips. Things that I guess I've just learned through trial and error over the course of the last couple years that I've really kind of dug into this. The big one, I would say, is to really learn to trust your instincts and have faith in your own creativity. I stifled myself for years and years, worrying about whether the ideas I had were cool and interesting and people would like them. And I still do. I really have to fight that kind of fight the idea that everybody's going to think my stuff's stupid, you know, right. Even if you're just like taking ideas from other things and wiggling them around, it's probably a cool idea and somebody's going to like it and it's yours.
Yeah.
So just, you know, have faith in what you come up with. Another thing that kind of brings me to another tip that I have, which is consume media. You know, you don't have to take a ton of notes, but like as you're watching your shows that you like or reading the books you like, make a note of the stuff that really affects you as a consumer of that media, not just characters and plots, but like the things that make you feel stuff. Because when you're touched in a particular way by a piece of media and you can understand why that worked, then you can translate that into your work. And hopefully it will affect your players in a similar way.
Yeah. I mean, the number one rule I think is don't be afraid to steal stuff. A lot of stuff has already been, you know, put out there into the world. You don't have to feel confined to coming up with the most newest brand spanking new idea out there. I mean, if there's good stuff in media, just use it. I think it's wonderful.
100%. I mean, that's the name of the game with art and with creativity is you take what makes an impact on you and then you translate it in your own way with your own characters. And you do what you want to do with it. I mean, that's how it's always been. The idea that you can come up with something perfectly original is, I don't really even believe that's true. Another tip I have, don't be afraid to change canon in either, whether it's in Galarian or even if you're coming up with your own world.
But it's canon. It's sacred. You can't touch it.
No. I disagree wholeheartedly with that statement because, you know, at the end of the day, as we were kind of mentioning earlier, there's just some questions that Paizo's never going to answer. And they created all of this lore for you to do with as you see fit. And the bottom line is if you run a game and your players are really getting into it, they're going to make their own decisions and they're going to change canon anyway. Mm-hmm. It happened in my group. One of the big things I remember is they were really worried about Magnemar being attacked by the Rune Lords and the agents of the Rune Lords. And so they just brought the guy who founded Magnemar back to life and put him in charge because they knew they could count on him.
Yeah, it's totally not something that happens in, you know, the real books, real in quotes, but like it works. It made the game fun, right?
Yeah, Yeah, it made them feel like they had control. And I mean, that's ultimately, I think the goal is to give your players agency. And if they change canon, then whatever. So my last piece of advice, I think, is to just research. And, you know, reading the books and the rule books and the campaign settings will really help frame your ideas. Or if you are coming up with a brand new setting, then, yeah, I mean, as we said before, steal something, change the name of it, make it a little different. And also research real life, because if anything has ever happened in the real world, then I guarantee you it can happen in Galarian and any other place that you come up with. Because there's been some crazy shit happen in the real world. Yeah. there's been some crazy stuff.
Speaking of the real world, like, what kind of real world mythology do you think can inform our homebrew worlds, like common themes or threads?
So I think pretty much anything you want to pull from real world myth is fair game. I know Paizo for a fact has done that 100%. Mm-hmm. One big example that I can think of is the founder of Tal'Dorei was a guy named Tal'Darris, and he's somewhere in between Gilgamesh and Hercules. He's very similar in, you know, he accomplished a lot of challenges to become the man he was, and he has achieved basically demigodhood in terms of his power. And then there's also just, even underneath that mythology, themes that come up over and over and over again. I mean, the hero's journey is a big one that I think a lot of people are aware of, whether they know it or not. I mean, Star Wars is the hero's journey.
Yep.
So if you know Star Wars, then you know that. I think another good specific example would be if you look at Phirasma, she's the goddess of death in Galarian. And she's a lot like Hades. She's pretty neutral, very rigid in her enforcement of her rules, and pretty disconnected from the rest of the pantheon. So if you know that and you want to run a game where Phirasma features pretty heavily, look at stuff that happened to Hades. Maybe you want your PCs to rescue someone that they feel Phirasma misjudged. That's a campaign. Or perhaps somebody makes a deal with Phirasma to help her take out a powerful lich because she really hates intelligent undead because they're sort of defying their fate, right? Yeah. That's a campaign too. I mean, actually, I'm pretty sure that's an AP already. So
they just got to make sure that their new Phirasma sounds like James Woods while they're making it, right?
Yes, exactly.
So earlier you mentioned that, you know, you had a little bit of apprehension about your players, you know, thinking that the stuff that you came up with might be bad or something. But what can you do to make your players curious about exploring your world or digging into the kind of homebrew mythologies and lore that you come up with?
So something I've kind of learned over the course of taking a decent amount of creative writing classes, I used to really want to be a writer. And one of the things that I was told a lot was that you can't tell people too much. It's better to kind of show people some stuff and lead them on and let them come to their own conclusions. And I think that applies to homebrew too. You can describe stuff to people to a degree, but you don't want to give too much away, because then that sort of takes away their ability to respond to that. And I think that response that the players get to have is really, really crucial to building that sort of interest and curiosity. You kind of have to breadcrumb them toward the things that they might be interested in, which is another point. Follow your players and don't get too terribly attached to staying exactly on the plan that you've set, because I can guarantee you it's not going to happen. Yeah. I tried that getting started. I had this, you know, I did all this planning and all of this extra prep work when I started getting ready for Rise of the Rune Lords, and then things went, you know, I mean, went off the rails. There was a wedding, there's a funeral, you know, like there's a bunch of stuff that was not in the plan, but it was still fun because the players got to affect what was going on in the world. I think you should also not be afraid to ask your players how they feel about stuff. If you can tell that they're kind of sitting at the table and they're not engaging with what you're presenting, you can ask them why. You can send them a message. It's not a big deal. If you've got players who really want to play, being communicative about those kinds of issues will solve a lot of those problems, I think. Yeah. Of course, that depends on if you have players at your table who can handle that, and some can't. And, you know, I mean, you can't control that. But
yeah.
I think communicating with your players and having them communicate their concerns to you will really help if you're struggling with that.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you can't give your players everything. There was so much crap in Rise of the Rune Lords that it told me in the book that I was never able to actually communicate to the players because it never came up.
Yeah.
There's always going to be some extra stuff that they just don't get to have, and that's okay. You can always tell them stuff later. I did that all the time. If they got through like a boss fight, I would tell them later, like, oh, if this had happened, then you could do this. Because it doesn't really affect how, you know, now that they're past it, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, Paizo gives a lot of background information for some of these encounters, and I can never find ways to communicate that stuff. It'll be like, this Boggart Lord bought this place from someone, and then they decided that they didn't like the statues, and so they tore them down. And you're like, how do I get that to the players?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's tricky.
Besides, like, leaving a note where someone wrote their journal entry.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, that's not a flaw in anybody's DM style. It again, if you're following your players' interests and you don't have somebody who's like, I'm going to do all the research ever to find out everything I can about this one person. And sometimes those people exist, but like, if you don't have that person in the party, it's just impossible. It's just impossible to get all of that information out, and that's okay.
And it reminds me of a piece of advice that I heard on some GM channel, which was like, if you want to write a story, write a book. don't make it something that your players have to discover on their own.
Yeah. I mean, because the worst thing you can do is railroad your players. I think that's really important to avoid if you can. A lot of that goes into how you prep your game. It's okay. Like, it's their story that you are facilitating, and it's a collaborative effort.
So, do you have any final pieces of wisdom or advice to GMs or players, and or players, I should say, about engaging in lore, creating lore, anything like that?
I mean, this is a little cliche, but I would say more than anything, the most important thing you can do is to try and make your games fun. And that's not going to look the same for one group as it is for another group. You know, like, you can watch Matt Mercer and Matt Colville and all of these amazing DMs tell you what they do. And they're so smart and so creative. But at the end of the day, do what your players think is fun. Because I think my successes, for whatever they're worth, have come from kind of letting go of my, I guess, a little bit of my ego and a little bit of my fear as a writer, and just seeing where it goes. And I think that's where the lore, if you're trying to create lore, I think that's how you're going to really create something special and meaningful that your players are going to talk to you about years later. I mean, we still, my friends and I who played in Rise of the Rune Lords, they still bring stuff up to me sometimes and are just like, and we just talk about it, how cool it was. And I don't feel like I feel like I was responsible, but it was something we all shared. And that's what makes it really special.
Back to that rule from our last episode is talk to your players. Get them involved. Get them as part of the collaborative story creation that you all are working on together. It's not just a GM thing. It's not just a player thing. It's all of you working together. Victoria, it's been great having you on here, giving us your wisdom and your knowledge about Galarian lore. Where else can people find you if they want to engage with you more?
So I do have a TikTok. It is called Visit Galarian. It's not been super active lately, but there's a lot of videos on there that I did, especially last year, that you can check out. There's also a Twitter for Visit Galarian. Again, not as active because I've been focusing a lot on Gloria's videos. And those videos you can find on Deadly D8's YouTube channel. I also have a Twitter for Gloria that is at gbrainar, B-R-A-E-N-A-R. That's her name. I try to post things on there most every day where I sort of interact with people's tweets and talk about the books that have come out and sort of give little tidbits of lore in between the videos that come out, which we're trying to do one or two of those a month. They're not super active yet. But again, I've only made a couple, so we're still kind of in the early stages. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. So what did you think? Did any of this advice help you develop your own lore? Do you know a little bit more about Galarian? Tell us at RuleLord2E on Twitter, and make sure to check out more episodes at RuleLord2E.com. But until next session,
don't let the rules rule you.